it'll disconnect me.
Yeah, I always have a hard time adding more than one. Last time I like call a bunch of people, and it's still ringing on his end. And he's usually timely.
Yeah.
Of all my co-hosts, he's on time. Just like he reads his comics in alphabetical order, he's more anal retentive than most of us.
He's on the ball.
Yeah.
Looks like he's on. Is he?
Are you there? Rob. I see him there. He's highlighted. We can't hear you. Unplug your mic and plug it back in. There you are. At least I don't know if that was you or him.
He sent a message. He said, yeah, you aren't hearing me.
Do you want me to try to call him? Disconnect and call back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, my God. Mike.
Yeah.
My wireless headset does not work.
Ah.
I got to use this old wired one that the earphones.
Yeah.
The foam on it are literally disintegrating.
That's sexy. That's like really manly.
Because nothing else seems to work. I bought a new headset that is wired, and I used it the other day with Kirk and Joe.
Yeah.
And I could only, it was brand new. I just bought it. I can only hear out of one of the ears.
Yeah, that was weird because I listened to the show and you faded early in the episode where you were talking and the volume went low and I'm like, oh no. And then when you came back the second time, you were solid, like when you were talking about your book. But when you were talking about Amazing Man, I was like, wow, your volume was like way low.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because I was playing with the actual plug, and when I pulled the plug out slightly, I got volume in both ears. But what I didn't know is until Kirk mentioned it, is that my voice got really low on the recording. So then I just plugged it all the way back in, and I just dealt with only hearing in my left ear.
Wow, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Time to get in a third headset.
Try to buy some foam for your old headset.
That's actually probably a better idea. Kyle, well, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Rob?
Good, welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining this morning.
Yeah, but that those headset issues, that sounds just like me, because I have to use a headset at work, and I've told Mike the story, but the headset I've got that's like 5 years old and falling apart works perfectly, and every new headset I buy never works.
It's crazy.
I know.
I don't know what the deal is with this brand new one. I mean, it looks beautiful. It's got like the over the ear headphones, so like it would block out sound from like the kids and stuff. But
yeah,
I can only hear in one ear.
Maybe you need some kind of driver. Maybe it's your computer.
Maybe.
How old is it?
Oh, I don't know. It's a few years old now. But probably five. No, it's got to be older than that. Probably 8 or 9 years.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know. But, I mean, this Logitech wireless one worked fine. And then the last couple times I tried to use it, that's where, like, it wasn't recognizing it. And this time it recognized it, but the microphone wasn't working. Just the actual head. Yeah, I don't know.
Real podcasting problems.
I know. This has got to be fascinating to the listener.
Well, my favorite headset, Harley destroyed. Yeah. But this one does all right. I have to like unplug it and plug it back in at least 5 times before I get it to work.
Really?
Yeah. That's why I usually come on around 8:15 or something and I do a mic check test.
Yeah.
and make sure it works.
Well, I should have done some testing, but are you guys familiar with a property called Pokemon?
Yes.
Yeah. My 7-year-old son had discovered Pokemon earlier this year, and we just this past week learned how to actually play. And so he begged me to start playing. So I played until 10:25 my time. And I'm like, oh, my God, because the clock in the dining room was 5 minutes slow. So I thought I had plenty of time.
Did you win?
We didn't get to finish. We'll finish later this afternoon. Yeah.
So are you playing like are you playing it on like a video game or?
I downloaded the apps for them for the actual card game, but. The card game. Yeah, sorry. But he wants to play the actual so we were playing with physical cards. He likes the physical media, Mike.
that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good guy.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, you don't want to play on the computer? No, I want to play with the actual cards. I'm like, okay.
That's very rare these days.
Right?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, he was excited. So that was pretty cool. You know, we played a little bit and then I had to jump over here a little late. But Mike,
right.
before we get started, I just wanted to offer my condolences on your cousin again. I haven't talked to you since that happened, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, it's rough, man. I'm still talking to my cousin Angelo, and he's a mess.
I can imagine. I mean, it's never easy, but, you know, I mean, sounds like, you know, I heard you talk and stuff on your weekly reads and everything. And I mean, he was a young man. So,
yeah,
that makes it even tougher. So I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I'm more sorry for his mom and dad and brother. It's just like, I don't know. It's just devastating.
Yeah.
And wife, I mean.
Oh, and he's got kids, you said?
Yeah.
That's rough.
And I don't know when they're gonna snap out of it. You know, like I don't know. They're in this funk, and they don't leave the house, and everywhere you look is a constant reminder of somebody you lost.
Yeah.
And it's really like you gotta get out of the house. I mean, you have to, even if you go to the park for an hour and walk around and just think, you know.
Yeah.
But if you stay there, you're just gonna, I don't know, they're in a circle of hell right now.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone deals with it differently, but yeah, I mean, it's
yeah, you can't really tell somebody, all you can offer is help, you know.
Yeah.
But when it happens, it's just a thing that you have to eventually come to grips with.
Yeah, because
on your own terms, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's not something you can permanently dwell in. Otherwise, you're never gonna heal from that. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean it's still recent, so I don't blame them for still, you know, kind of being in a funk. But yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it could last a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird too, because my mom, she doesn't want my mom to go over, like her sister, you know.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know. I don't understand the reasons why, but maybe it's because I wear my heart on my shoulder, and I'd rather embrace family, you know, than push away family. I've always been that way.
Yeah, I think
I'm my mother's son, you know.
I think it's healthier, and I think that you can start that healing process a little easier if you have that support around you. So it would be good if she lets your mom in and stuff. I think that would help in the long run, you know.
Yeah, I wish she would.
Yeah.
And then my mom's a mess, so it's like I don't know.
Yeah.
Life gets tough when you get older. Like it's just, you realize more and more with each year that you're immortal. You know,
yeah.
Because you think you're immortal, and nothing will ever happen. And then you see your loved ones, you know, and it's just...
Well, especially if you've been fortunate in the earlier part of your life where you haven't, maybe you didn't have a lot of deaths of, you know, people that were close to you. And then, yeah. you know, you're getting older and you're like, oh my God. My parents just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary on Friday. And it's like blowing my, like 50 years. Like I remember going to my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary at the time. We're like, oh my God, they're so old. But I don't think of my parents as so old, but they're the exact same age or a little bit older than my grandparents were at the time. You know what I mean? It's just time just flies so quickly.
Yeah. Time bites you in the ass and everything.
Yep. It does.
At work and everything. It's just like constant struggle. Like your kids were just all, both of you, you know, just little babies, and now they're they're little adults.
Crazy. Oh, I know. It's you gotta enjoy every minute you know that you can.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to make it on today, because I know you didn't know if you're gonna have to work or not.
Yeah, I really had to work. I just needed it. Like I just couldn't do it anymore. That's another thing that the rat race, right? I mean, as you get older, like when I was in my 30s, man, I could just go like an Energizer bunny, and now that I'm 50, it's like my body just wants to shut down, and it's like, fuck this, I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, oh, I got to a good stopping point, and I was like, I need the weekend off. I need it. And then I'll go back to the 12-hour days tomorrow.
Man, how long is that going to last for you?
It's just one more week. Right. I hope.
Is it like this at the beginning of every year?
No, it's just stupid me, man. I volunteered for something that... I was bored, and I don't like to be bored, and I volunteered for something that was due, like, in a week. And it was like, okay. Right before the Christmas holiday, which I was off for 2 weeks, and I'm like, oh, geez, and then the funeral, and I don't know, just, like, bad timing.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. a lot all happening at once. Yeah. Mm.
But anyway, we're here to talk retro.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I bought? I finally went and bought that Blackhawk G.I. Joe.
you bastard. You
did,
huh?
Last night, last night I was sitting at the computer, and I'm like, God, I want this one more than any of them. Cause, like,
I really want the enemy ace.
The enemy ace looks great,
yeah,
but he doesn't look great if you take him out of the box, because the main, like, the costume that is really enemy ace that you know of in the comics is on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
So it's like, you want to take the middle part out, dress the doll in the appropriate costume. and at least with the Blackhawk, he's like in his, it has his standard costume on. And then on the left, it has that crazy red costume. Yep. And on the right, it has like the Han Solo Hoth snow costume, you know. And then it's got the military comics reproduction comic.
That's nice.
Yeah.
When are you gonna get that in?
I don't know. I just ordered it last night on a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I was feeling down, man. I was talking to my cousin, and sometimes there's retail therapy. It's like, you know, I was sort of down, and then I started thinking about Eric Martin, which was a bad idea, but I just been hearing a lot of Rush lately, because Rush was his band. Like, he loved Rush.
Yeah.
And because Perth just passed away, they have, like, Rush everywhere. Like, they're playing a lot of Rush. And so I'm thinking about Eric a lot. And then on Sirius Radio, they even have a Rush station. So I've been listening to a lot of Rush.
Oh, nice.
Because I love Rush. It's one of those bands that it's like I always wanted to see, like, and I never was able to.
Yeah.
but
you know what's funny? Bill Boomer hates Rush.
Canadians, man. I don't know.
I think he's technically required to love Rush, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in Buffalo, and I'm actually required to love Rush. So I think that he would, as an actual Canadian.
Yeah, you'd think. No, he just says they're boring.
No, I know. I'm just joking.
He loves their music. He just says he doesn't want a documentary on them.
There was nothing.
Nothing controversial about them.
I mean, yeah, at least that we know of. I mean, they seem to be three guys that got along very well.
So talented, though. Three individuals can make so much noise. I mean, and it's like an art, you know? It just flows. And, like, there's drum riffs in that. And their songs, and it's like, how does a human being do that? Like, how do they do that? That non-standard, like, all out of the blue, just da 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 da. I just don't get it, you know.
Yep.
It's. Yeah, I adore Rush, and so did Eric, and it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that just you hear Rush, and I can't stop thinking about him, and he died in his 30s.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I didn't believe it when it happened. I don't know if you heard the story, but with his last name, which is his brother, contacted me and said, you know, Eric is dead. And I'm like, who are you? Like, I thought it was spam. Mm. And I said, Eric's tweeting, like, right now. And I didn't know that the time that Eric had his tweet to auto-tweet, right? Like, he was constantly auto-tweeting. So I'm like, well, you know, I don't believe what's going on. It was just surreal. And I had just talked, I had just podcasted with him. Like, it just like, how's he dead? You know, like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just, it's rough. He was in his 30s, and I don't know.
What had happened? Did he had a heart attack?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he knew something was wrong. And the thing is he used to work for the Postal Service. He was laid off, and he had no health insurance. So he was waiting to get back into school because school offered some kind of health insurance, which he had applied for.
Mm.
And he was waiting for that to kick in. But he was having, like, shortness of breath and all kinds of weird symptoms. And I'm like, dude, just go to the fucking doctor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to treat you. They can't just turn you away.
I don't want to go on a rant, but it drives me insane that anyone should have to make a health decision like that. That ends up, obviously, in this case, he ended up dying because he doesn't have the right health care.
And he knew something was wrong, you know?
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's horrible. Nobody should have to go through that.
Yeah. And even people with health care do that. Oh.
Absolutely.
Just because of the cost. I mean, it's still going to cost.
Yeah, high deductible bullshit. It's this new age of things where you have to spend like $4,000 before they start even contributing. So it's
absolutely. I mean, you know, we've got decent health care at my work, but like this, one of the, I mean, nobody that I knew personally, but somebody in our department in another area of the state ended up with a brain cancer, and of course they have health insurance, but they're doing all these fundraisers and stuff for them because it still doesn't cover everything that you need. I mean, how is it?
All the stuff that you like need is like non-standard. When you start dealing with like aggressive cancers, you need aggressive therapy, and they fucking look it up, and that's not covered.
Right.
And like, what do you do? Do you want to die?
Okay.
I mean,
I'll just sit there on
chemotherapy and just slowly die? I mean, what the fuck?
It's horrible.
No, you want the experimental goddamn, you know, drug because you want a shot at living. It's just, it's fucking bullshit. I mean.
I don't know. See, we are going to go off on a rant.
Yeah. It is. I mean. I thought I was having a heart attack once, and I drove myself to the hospital immediately, and I didn't care. Like, I just didn't care what the repercussions would be cost-wise because I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But at least if you do that, they do an EKG almost immediately. they do blood work because you have like elevated things like when you're having a heart attack.
Yeah, different signals or
you have evidence in your bloodstream, and they can look for that immediately and act on that. But there's a lot of, it's a silent killer for, it could be like, you know, symptoms that you think are just normal and they're not.
Right.
But yeah, you could have an anxiety attack that's very similar to a heart attack.
That happened to my wife once.
Yeah.
She had to call the ambulance. The ambulance came. It did all these tests. They're like, no, you're having some sort of a anxiety attack. And
well, that's what they rolled mine to, because, you know, they send you home after they've done all the blood screening and all that stuff. And they say you have to do a follow up with your doctor, and then you do some more tests. And that's what they rule off, like a false, you know, you have the symptoms, and I'm stupid. Like, I think I'm having a heart attack. Oh, I'll drive myself to the hospital. You know, why couldn't I say, hey, Joe, take me to the hospital, you know? Why did I have to fucking get behind the wheel and drive myself? You know, I have no idea. That's a stupidity on my part.
I got to tell you guys, just to try to lighten it up a little, kind of a funnier story. So we had where I work in a call center. So one of our representatives, I can't remember exactly what was going on with her. She was having some sort of big issue or whatever, something bad enough that they said, we're calling 911. And she's like, no, don't call 911. Because it was embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't want everyone to see, you know, that. So 911 comes. They're like, yeah, we got to take you to the hospital. And they're like, here, get on the stretcher and stuff. She goes, oh my God. She was like mortified. Right. And so she goes to the what do you call the guys that do the ambulance?
The paramedics.
The paramedics. Yeah. So she goes to the paramedic. Can you just cover me all up with a cloth? And the guy's looking at like, no, we cannot. That will cause a whole other uproar. It didn't even occur to her, because she just didn't want people to see who it was. That then the rumor would be that somebody just died.
See, that's the weird though. Like, there is a generation. I think it's the generation above us, right? There's our generation. There's the one above us. Kyle might be even in the younger generation, but the one that's older than us, they have like this. There's like this element of pride and like this element, like, I don't want to look bad in front of others, or I don't ever want to. And it's weird. Like, for me, I don't care. Like, if I'm shitting myself on the ambulance, I don't care. Yeah. Save my life. I'm not going to be over there trying to hold it. You know, I'm not going to care.
This woman is around the same age or a little younger than me, and if it was me, I would have said the exact same thing.
What, cover me up?
Yes! I don't want anyone to know that it was me.
I don't care.
I would have been too
embarrassed. I really have, maybe it's because I've hit that point, like the age, like I just want to live, you know?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. And I really think when we get older, like, my best friends are all over the world, but we got to take care of each other, because who else is going to do it, man?
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
It's just a different place, you know?
Yeah.
And as things get more automated, it's more fucking scary, you know? Because people try to take advantage of the elderly.
God, yeah. That's horrible.
Through phone calls, through hacking into their stuff, and all kinds of stuff. I mean, my mom is calling me every week. I got this. I'm like, don't open it. Call the bank. Yeah, I mean, don't open it.
I wish.
Don't click on that leak. Oh, every week you click on this thing that says virus scan. You do it.
I really wish we treated our elderly the way that they do in like Asia.
Yeah. with respect.
Especially now that we're getting elderly.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. 20 years ago, I really didn't care.
Well, did you see what I bought old comic-wise? The last deck?
I saw some of them. I'm not sure if I caught up.
Well, the one that I really was excited about more than anything was the Brave and the Bold number 35.
Yeah, I did see that.
Which is the second Hawkman in the Silver Age. But I have them all now.
Wow.
I have all the Brave and the Bold early Hawkman issues. So now I just need like one and like four others. And then I'll have every Hawkman from the Silver Age going forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Every Hawkman? You have the first Silver Age Hawkman?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Michael. I had no idea.
Yep. And you swiped that at the Showcase Adam on me, and I would be in the same area for that. But
well, I
got,
didn't know you were interested in it.
I got the first Vision as well.
I know, saw that. That's
so
nice
that too. that one I've been wanting for a while.
Yeah, it got really expensive about the around the movie, but I think it dropped slightly after that, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, nowadays, yeah. That's awesome.
Yes, and a lot of Fantastic Four. I'll have almost every Fantastic Four, like, from 20 up.
Yeah, that's insane, too.
Yeah. And I just have fallen in love with Galactus. Like, have you heard of Adopt a Character? There's Collected Comics Library, which focuses on omnibuses and stuff. And every year they do Adopt a Character. And last year I did Venom, and I learned a lot about Venom, and I enjoyed the journey, especially reading some of the things that inspired the film, and then reading things like Madness by Ann Nocenti that was like, wow, this is like the best Venom I've ever read in my life. And then this year I did Silver Surfer because I've always, as a kid, I was like, who's this lame-ass dude on a surfboard? Instead of saying, like, he's awesome, right? I'm like, he just sits there and talks to himself and contemplates things. Well, now I'm 50, and I'm contemplating the same goddamn things. And it's like, I am so relating to everything, like, in terms of, like, religion and everything that goes on in the Silver Surfer's mind, because Galactus is a being. He's not a villain. He needs to consume substance like we do. Like, we need to eat foods, plants. He needs to consume planets. And it's just like the natural course of life for him. And he's like one of the first beings in the universe. And that's what he does. And he has these heralds go scope it out. And it takes forever for the Surfer to realize that something's wrong. Like, this is before, it's like, he just needs to eat. I need to find him a place. Oh, these are bugs. These are creatures. I don't care. And it's Alicia Masters, the Thing's girlfriend at the time, that convinces the Silver Surfer that life matters. I mean, it just, it's an incredible story. It just, it's so, And like, Galactus arrives, and he's like a god, and he's going to kill Earth, and he doesn't care. And he's coming in with his devices. He's ready to drill into the Earth and just consume it, and it's all in its entirety. And the Fantastic Four are there. And, you know, like, the Thing is like, it's clobbering time. I'm punching Galactus, and it's like not doing shit, you know? It's like they're feeling helpless. And Reed is like, what the hell's going on? And he just got back from a mission, and he hadn't shaved in weeks. And he decides during this catastrophe of the world ending, and everybody's in the streets panicking, that I got to shave. I think that is so funny. I have to think about this. And, you know, while I'm thinking about it, I think I could use a close shave.
Maybe that helps.
You know, like, Sue is being, you know, she's panicking, and the Human Torch is a hothead, and he tries to light Galactus on fire, and he blows him out like a gnat. And the thing that really saves the anything is the watcher, and he's not supposed to do shit. He's like just supposed to watch. He's a bald guy in space, and they don't, they're not supposed to interfere with anything. They're like catalogers. He just absorbs information. But he loves Earth so much, and he knows that Galactus is going to kill it, that he sends the torch, which I found really weird, on this mission to this. He ports him over to wherever to get the ultimate nullifier, and then Reed sort of threatens him, and it's like the nullifier will destroy everything, and Galactus is like, including yourselves, and we'll use it. But they give the nullifier back to Galactus in order to stop his invasion. And God, what it is an amazing journey. It's like from 47 to 50, and I just thought it was an amazing Fantastic Four issue.
That's cool.
Yeah, and the torch really saves the day. And the other thing is Surfer turns on his master, and he gets the part I really don't understand is he's got this, you know, cosmic power, and Galactus basically takes away his ability for space, to live in space. So he's like stranded on Earth, and I didn't realize how long he'd been stranded, because it's not until like the Englehart and Marshall Rogers that he actually escapes Earth.
Yeah.
So it's like insane. But me at 50 reading Silver Surfer is like amazing, and he goes through girlfriends like crazy. I mean, he loves Shalaba, you know, from Zen La or wherever he's from. Yeah. And then he goes back to her, and she rejects him because she has to keep their planet running, because she's like the big being of their planet. Mm-hmm. And I don't have time for you. And then he falls in love with Mantis, and then Mantis dies because the elders of the universe kill her. But she's like sort of an immortal being. She can't really die. She's like, they almost portray her like she's like Swamp Thing, like in the green. But and then he falls in love with Frankie Ray, and I like know Frankie Ray because I was reading John Byrne Fantastic Four.
Yep.
Like that was when I first was introduced to Galactus, was in John Byrne, and it was like, that's Frankie Ray, she's the Herald of Galactus, and I'm like, wow. Yep. So this journey has just been absolutely incredible, you know.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, he's quite the character.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading the Michael Adler stuff now with Dan Slott, and I didn't like it when I first read it. I read the first issue, and I'm like, no. But I think it's because of the order that I'm reading stuff. I'm like, holy shit, there's this girl on Earth that wished upon a star, and that star was Silver Surfer. And holy crap, because they're like on this weird planet that nobody knows about. Galactus can't even find it. And it is hidden from the Silver Surfer. And how long can it be hidden? He says, well, you need to be our warrior to protect us from this other deity, this other space deity, who he had stolen the heart from to keep this whole world alive. And he holds ransom this random girl from Earth. And you're like, well, Silver Surfer's like, I don't know who that is. What? Why are you threatening me with this nobody? You know, how can you threaten me with this nobody I've never even seen before? And then you learn the relationship is when she was a little girl, she wished upon a star to have, like, the star not die. That was her wish, and that star was Silver Surfer. So she like saves him later on. I'm like, holy crap! I mean, all the dots are connecting for me. Like for a character that I used to see on a freaking album cover. I don't remember Joe Satriani or whatever the hell he was, had the Silver Surfer on his album cover, and I don't know. It's like, man, this is incredible. I can see why people love the Surfer.
Yeah, he's a great character. I've always thought he was just super interesting, and really really tragic too, because he makes, you know, the ultimate sacrifice for his homeworld.
Yeah. It's a hell of a journey, I tell you. Like, I don't know why I never, even when I was reading Defenders, I never really latched on to him. Like, I was more when the Defenders was like Hulk and Valkyrie and Nighthawk and Doctor Strange than when it was Doctor Strange, Hulk, and Namor, you know, originally. I liked the other incarnation. So he was always like a character that, like, I never really understood. And when I really got into the Heralds is the John Byrne, because he had Terax and he had Frankie Ray and the Silver Surfer. And that's when the Heralds, like, they meant something to me. And it's been a while since they have. And then Annihilation happened, and you have the Annihilation wave wanting to hunt down all the, you know, Galactus's Heralds. And they start off by killing Airwalker. And, God, it's just, what a freaking journey. I mean, just, I'm adoring it. And I think that adopt a character is really, it's something I really believe in. Like, I think every year you can explore something that you just hadn't really been exposed to, and go down that rabbit hole and enjoy it.
Yeah. I for myself, I've never been like really, really interested in Silver Surfer, but I mean, I didn't dislike him either. I just really didn't have much of an opinion. Although I did read the, I guess it was probably the '90s, the '90s one with
that was,
Ron Lim.
Yeah, that was later.
Yeah, that's the only one that I've read. I read like the first 50 issues of that one.
Sounds like Kyle's familiar with it, because you met when I was talking about the Englehart Rogers. You seemed to like shake your head. Did you know that run, Kyle?
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that run. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those characters that has always kind of drawn me in. Mm-hmm. That run I really like. I really like the, I'm trying to remember what it's called. I don't know if you've ever read the, J. Michael Straczynski.
That short run, the 5 issues or something.
Yeah. Where he's dying and the Fantastic Four is trying to save him. That is an amazing miniseries.
I'm going to have to read that. I saw that on the app. So
yeah,
it's my journey.
Super emotional, really good.
I just never liked him as a kid because he was always thinking. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like a philosopher in space. And
yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
Now that I'm really thinking about life and everything, like, it means so much more at a different level. Like, it's just, wow, this is, what a fantastic character. I mean, what Kirby did to create that character and to visualize, I mean, still how iconic the Surfer is and how iconic Galactus's helmet is. And it's just, that's some creations out of Fantastic Four that just blow my mind. You know, Stan Lee and Jack did some amazing work together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's another thing too, like the Surfer is one of those characters that, you know, as a kid you see him and he just looks super cool, but then you get to know him and it's like he's really like one of those characters that you would never want to be, you know?
Right.
Because you think,
he's very alone.
Yeah, and he has to. He basically has to, you know, find these worlds for Galactus to destroy. So he's basically aiding in, you know, mass murder and destruction.
Yeah, but even he's thinking about it, like in the Annihilation Wave, like he's on his surfboard and he's like, what's the difference between a nihilist coming in here and destroying everything in Galactus? What, yeah. What's going on? Like, yeah. Galactus, it seems normal. He's hungry. This guy's coming over to destroy everything and expand the negative zone. So that's bad. I don't know. It just, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this Silver Surfer run. And it's made me love Galactus, like, even more so. Like, when I was looking for Blackhawk yesterday, I was on eBay looking for the Toy Biz Galactus figure. And, I mean, I also wanted the Build-A-Figure, but god dang, that thing's running for, like, $350.
Oh, jeez.
And, I was like, ah!
Yeah,
toys are worth a lot of money. That's all I have to say.
Hey, speaking of toys, real quick, are you going to get the McFarlane DC toys?
I wasn't planning on it.
I ordered the ones that are coming out already. I got the
through previews or what?
No, I just between Amazon and I think I saw a bunch of them that you could pre-order at Walmart.com. But I got the Batman Who Laughs that for some reason came earlier than all the rest.
My cousin told me he got that.
Yeah.
I've been picky and choosy like on toys, but they look amazing. They really do.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to some I'm hoping that they do a little bit more, some obscure figures.
Yeah.
I'd like to get some unusual ones.
Like Brother Power the Geek.
There you go.
Oh, my God. He showed up in Inferior 5, and my eyes just went, oh, my God, it's Brother Power. I remember reading those two issues when I was a kid, and I was like, man, these are hippie comics. These are weird. Like, how did they even exist? And then I read, like, articles about it later, and it, like, made me love the character. And then the Vertigo series came out, the Geek. And now I saw him in Inferior 5, and he's just so obscure, and I just love, like, obscurity. Like, you throw obscurity at me, and I just, like, oh, my God.
Yep. Yeah.
Give me a Todd McFarlane Brother Power the Geek, and I'll buy it for sure. I guarantee that.
That's the great thing about DC's toy lines is that they usually do include a lot of those obscure characters. Like there's always a Booster Gold and a Blue Beetle and you know, stuff like that. Like it's
yeah, I like that they do that. It's not always
Marvel does
Superman,
good too
Batman.
With the Hasbro line. Like their Legends, they're
those look good.
The one thing about the Legends, though, that I adore is the articulation, like the way things move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my favorite characters, and it might seem weird, and I have them at work, are Dazzler and Gwenpool. I have them, and I can just pose them in these crazy positions, man.
I've got the Dazzler. Is it the Dazzler, the disco one?
The skates, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I've got that one too.
I sometimes pose her in, like, the kick position, like, where she's got this microphone, and then mm-hmm. she's got, like, the light on the left hand, mm-hmm. and then I put her leg, like, she can balance on her skates really well, and I put her leg up, like, kicking in the face another character. Yeah, she's my favorite, the Dazzler, and I like Black Knight a lot, like, mm-hmm. a lot.
My only complaint so far with, like tried to pose it one time, but the Batman Who Laughs, it comes with a stand, but without the stand, I was finding it extremely difficult to get him to stand up.
Yeah. The DCs are very good, but the articulation and movement are not nearly as well done as the Hasbro.
Well, I figured maybe with the now that it switched to McFarlane, that maybe would have been a little different.
Well, McFarlane's always been, like, super detailed. When he came out with his Spawn figures, you're like, holy crap.
You'd never seen figures like that before.
Yeah. I have most of the first generation Spawn stuff in the basement, unopened. I didn't used to open anything. It's just been, like, within the last, I don't know, 5 years that I've started opening figures.
Yeah, I open them up now. I'm like, well, who cares?
I have to open them up too, because you gotta pose them and have them, you know, displayed properly, I feel.
Yeah.
But I got a small fortune in my basement. So.
Hey, you know, I mean, put those things on eBay and buy more comics.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it because, like, all my DC Direct, I used to have every single one, and they're all in brown boxes that they ship in.
Yeah.
And there's some obscure stuff, you know, like Jonah Hex, Sergeant Rock, Enemy Ace, the Freedom Fighters. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that's amazing.
Well, if you sell some of those, let me know, because I'll buy them.
Yeah, and some of those, the price is pretty high on those since they're
That's what I'm saying. It's like toys are expensive because they don't make as much. Do you know what I mean? And even though, like, I've been looking at, like, the Remco, even though they're crappy made, the Remco Warlord figures, I'm like, $300? Oh, my God. Because I've been wanting a Warlord. He looks like crap compared to the DC Direct Warlord.
Oh, my God.
That Warlord looks
like
amazing.
He-Man characters.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
But they have obscure characters like Deimos and Machiste and all, like, it's like, how do these exist?
I don't know. You can't. I can't believe
they have Hercules too, and Hercules sellers. Only had like a 10-issue run. I mean, it's insane that he exists. Arrak, Son of Thunder.
Yeah.
He has his own action figure. You're like, oh my God.
Like, did people buy these at the time? Like, who knew what these were? I don't know.
The Sergeant Rock ones we talk about a lot, but they bum me out because they're really not identifiable.
Yeah, a couple of the miscellaneous ones I remember as a kid.
Yeah, they're just generic. Oh, here's a sniper. Here's this. I want to see Rock. Where's Little Sure Shot? Where's Ice Cream Soldier? Come on, man.
Yep.
That's why those dolls that we were talking about, it's amazing. Because you can get a Little Sure Shot. You can get a Bulldozer. I forget, there's a woman from Golden Age Blackhawk that you can get that has the Dragon Lady tattoo on her. I mean, I'm like, what the heck? Mademoiselle Marie.
Yeah. I think I remember hearing you and Kirk talk about those, the Sergeant Rock ones that were just generic. It's like, why would you pay for the license for Sergeant Rock and then just make Sergeant Rock in generic characters? Why wouldn't you make the actual characters?
You knew what they were targeting. They wanted to hit the Joe world is what they wanted to do.
Oh, it's just
but
weird.
They were trying to make generic figures. You already had a gold mine right there. I mean, they each had distinctive personalities. They each represented all the different races. Do you know what I mean? You had like, it was like Big Jim's pack all over again. It was like, let's bring it.
Exactly.
So I had a lot to talk about the Silver Surfer, so I'll let one of you guys go next.
Kyle, would you like to go, or you want me to?
I can go. All right, so I've got this is a series that I've been slowly but surely trying to read from the beginning, and it's been slow going because I've kind of gotten off in other rabbit holes and things like this. But this is Spawn 66 from 1997. And it was written by Todd McFarlane, obviously. Pencils on this one is Greg Capullo.
Amazing.
Which, he's my...
He drew Spawn better than Todd, I think.
Oh, he did. Yeah, for sure. And
for longer, too.
He's the ultimate Spawn artist in my mind. And the... Just the facial expressions, there's so much detail. It's like, how long did it take him to draw one of these issues, you know?
And what amazes me is he really didn't, like, break out until Batman. Like it.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And it's like, why? Do people think it was still Todd? Because he did mimic Todd's style. Like, he did. Yeah. He did everything that Todd did and better, I thought. But he's an amazing artist in that book. And Spawn is like so underrated. It's like incredibly complex and intricate.
Oh, and, yeah. It's It's almost like it's like it's kind of like a huge giant soap opera.
It is. Know?
I just started picking it up again shortly before 300. Mm-hmm. I started getting the singles maybe at 296, 297, but I bought whatever the trade was just prior to that, so I could kind of catch up. Not catch up, but just to, you know, get my feet wet before the singles that I bought. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy how just linked it still is, even from the beginning of the series.
And Todd did break a world's record for most, you know, issues when he hit past Cerebus. So, and people often say, well, he didn't do Spawn. He has done Spawn, all of them, because he's listed in plot credits on every issue.
Yeah.
So people say, oh, yeah, he didn't draw it, but big deal, you know? I mean, he's still involved with his own property, and he wrote it.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably had, you know, the majority of creative control over what was happening, you know? Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to let somebody else take his, you know, his work.
That's right.
Yeah. But this issue, so... This is a couple issues after after Spawn. He pretty much kind of like dies again, and he's taken to hell. And his suit kind of assumes a little bit more control. He's starting to his suit is kind of like, now it's like made up of like the, like all the worms and bugs and everything. And so he's got a little bit different powers now. His powers have kind of evolved a little bit. And when he came back, he now has the ability to kind of replicate his skin. So he can see his old face again. So in this issue, it kind of starts off with Cog. So the old man that's kind of like he's basically like another, he's kind of like another Spawn, I guess. But he's like the expert that's telling Spawn everything about himself.
Cog is the old man guy, right? The bearded guy?
Yeah, he's the old man that kind of helps guide Spawn.
Yeah.
But he's talking with Sam and Twitch, and he's filling Sam and Twitch in on Al Simmons' life and kind of how he became Spawn, and he's telling them, you know, what Spawn is all about, and basically that their lives are now intertwined with Spawn's, so there's nothing they can really do about it, because they need to help Spawn, and Spawn needs to help them as well. And then there's a scene in here where Spawn gets dressed up in like a really nice suit, because he thinks now that he's got his skin back, he can go see his ex-wife Wanda. And so he's walking down the street and he's humming Staying Alive. And he doesn't realize that his skin is gone again. Like he thinks that he's got his skin, and he walks by this gang, and they start talking to him and like joking around with him. And he looks in the mirror or in a window and sees that his skin is gone, and so he like flips out and kind of runs back to the alley to hide again. And then another kind of little thread that's been going through these past few issues is Terry and Wanda's daughter Cyan. She has this pacifier that she holds on a shoestring, and the shoestring was like it was one of the stitches basically that was holding Spawn's face together. And she she found, I can't remember where she found the shoestring, but it was like in the aftermath of one of Spawn's fights. So she found the shoestring and like tied her pacifier to it. And she's like super attached to this shoestring. And there's a scene where she's playing with her dog and the dog steals the shoestring and she just like loses her mind over it.
I remember that issue. I remember that piece of it anyway.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see where that's going to go. And the thing I like about Spawn, it's like each issue is written kind of like a TV show where you see, you'll see maybe like a brief scene over like two pages and then it'll cut to a new scene. But Spawn in this one, most of this issue is him talking to Cog in the alley, and he's kind of desperate to like regain his humanity so that he can try to get his wife back. And Cog is basically telling him, your face rotted because your uniform and your new body rejected it. So this is kind of the way you are now. You're not going to have everything that you had before. And so Spawn just kind of loses it. And there's a whole like page of him just like stabbing himself, trying to kill himself. So he's like just pretty desperate here. And then really the only other kind of major scene here is Spawn runs into Terry and tells Terry that he wants to work with him again to try and bring down Jason Wynn. And So Spawn says, so Terry asks about Wanda, and Spawn says, she can't see me like this or know I'm even alive. You keep her happy for now. And Terry loses it because Spawn's basically trying to use him so he can get his wife back. So Terry kind of yells at him, and Spawn slinks away back to the alley. So that's pretty much that issue. It's the last few are really just Spawn trying to come to terms with the fact that he's not going to come back to life. He is what he is. He's this kind of demon creature now. But one interesting thing that was said in this issue that I thought was cool, and I don't know how big it is, but I read it as being kind of big. Cog tells him that because all along you're under the impression that the devil is the one that kind of resurrected Spawn, but Cog says that God actually put Spawn back on Earth and the devil just kind of claimed him. So, in a way, Spawn is kind of an instrument of God as well. But it seems like he has more of a choice than what he thinks he does. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, it was another great issue. I've enjoyed pretty much every Spawn that I've read. The story's always good, and like I said, it's like a giant soap opera with these recurring characters and kind of them evolving throughout.
It's pretty cool because it's very self-contained too. Like,
yeah.
You can enjoy Spawn and not have to read any of the other stuff, even though like he's had like Sam and Twitch by Brian Michael Bendis and other stuff. Mm-hmm. You can just take that for what it is and just read it. Like, you don't have to read Spawn Dark Age or all the other stuff. You can just stay in that comic and don't have to go outside of it.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's cool how he would have guest writers on for different arcs, and the story still kind of stayed within itself. Like, it didn't get too crazy
Yeah, Dave
with guest
Sim and all
writers.
kinds of crazy creators in there. Neil Gaiman.
Alan Moore wrote some.
Yeah.
I think Grant Morrison might
Alan
have too.
Moore's like an enigma. Like, I just don't understand him. Like,
Yeah.
he could be a rich man, but he's gonna die poor because his decisions, but I guess you can respect him for that.
Yeah.
It's just such a strong will on his, I don't know, on his part, but
Yeah.
man, I think I would have just said, sign me the checks, you know, because
Right. I mean,
I
yeah.
got I have my daughter here and I can leave them something, you know.
I mean, at this
And then
point,
he should be making more comics
well, this is
because
35 years ago. You know what I mean? It's like it's already over with. It's done. There's nothing you can do about it.
yeah.
Why not take it? Why not at least take advantage of at least getting making that company DC like give you cash?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With the Watchmen stuff. I mean, Dave Gibbons wasn't happy about it either,
Yeah.
but he got over it.
Right.
Yeah,
I just
that's the
wish that
thing.
I wish that McFarlane, like when he bought Eclipse, he would still have Miracle Man and Airboy and everything. Because I don't know how he got shafted after that, like what there was with that property, but he did come out with the Miracle Man action figure, you know?
Yeah.
And he did have, I think Airboy appeared in his comic. But and he's had some Eclipse characters show up in his in Spawn, but it's like he never really could fully like just do it, you know? And
Right.
it's weird. Now Marvel kind of owns it, but then they don't want to do anything with it. So it's such a weird thing, but Alan Moore, it just seems like everything he touches just has like this surreal world in it that I don't know, like other writers just can't tap it. Like I don't know like how he writes or what he does, but man, it just has so many elements of things to think about. Even like his Avatar stuff is amazing.
Yeah.
He's really an incredible writer.
Yeah,
I've
for
got a
sure.
question for you guys going back to Spawn because I own the first 50 issues. And
Well,
then the next issue.
good luck filling them because
Well,
they're
I'm not
expensive.
gonna. But then I read the trade that probably started in the 270s. What happened to his wife Wanda and his daughter? Are they still around? Are they gone? What
They're still around now.
are they? I mean, I haven't seen either
Well,
one of them appear in the past 25 issues that I read.
she went to hell like Wanda did in the Eric Larson McFarlane crossover. And
Yeah, I thought she died at one point, but
yeah, I think
I
she's
haven't gotten
back.
to that point yet, but I was aware that she had died.
What about his daughter? Does anyone, I mean,
I
is
think
she
she's still
older now
around
or?
with what's the friend's name? Not Jason Wynn, he's the bad guy, but
Yeah.
Al,
Terry,
Al's
her
Terry,
dad.
Terry, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, because I haven't seen them show up at all in the, you know, since whatever, like say 278 or something like that. So I just
Well,
wasn't sure if you guys knew.
wasn't before 300 though, even the other Spawn guy? Like it wasn't even Al, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was him again. That's actually what made me.
Oh yeah, I
Todd
was
started
I was
right.
th I was thinking of the other guy 'cause somebody else took the mantle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he, Todd's. I think he was. What was he starting to do? Maybe he was doing some more covers again. I don't remember what he was doing. Because Jason Sean Alexander was still drawing it. Oh, you know what? I think that Todd was taking back over as sole writer because it looks like he had a co-writer
Yeah,
to that.
I'm actually behind. It's one of those ones that I'm just a piling up. But it's like the last arc I remember really reading, like that's memorable to me, is when Wanda died. Mm-hmm. But I cried during that arc. That was like, that was incredible. That Eric Larson did the pencils, and it was amazing. It was incredible.
Nice.
And I love Eric Larson. But like Alan Moore, like even when Rob Liefeld, I think he knows he can't write very well. Like he'd probably like say screw you and block me if he heard me say that. But he's got some great writers to write for him, like Brandon Graham. Alan Moore wrote Supreme. I mean, he got Robert Kirkman on Youngblood for a while before Robert Kirkman blew up. I mean, I think he knows, like, how to get creators on there. Like, how do you scoop Alan Moore? I have no idea.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because that's, like you
said. For something like Youngblood, I mean, like, Supreme, because it's like, why is Alan Moore writing Supreme? And, like, that's his take on Superman, you know?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that he had written Spawn. I was like, wow, I can't believe he would take this job, you know?
I think it was respect because that generation thought Alan Moore was the shit. I mean, they were like, this guy is a god.
All right, well, I guess I'll cover one next. What do I got here? Okay, the first one I'm going to cover is Mantra number 1.
Don't crap on this. That's all I have to say because I have fond memories of
Mantra number 1 from 1993. This is the first series because I think there was a second one, right? Like
yes.
Again?
She's blonde in the next one, though.
Okay, yeah. So this is the first one.
Tread lightly, Rob.
I will do my best.
Tread lightly. Yeah.
This is Malibu Comics, written by Mike W. Barr.
Because I remember the Sludge review, and I was like, I wasn't there to defend the Sludge.
The Sludge review? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. I was like, what is Rob saying?
You're screaming into
by Aaron the Priestie. Come on, man.
All right, so the writer was Mike W. Barr, who very familiar with, right? Like Batman and the Outsiders and all sorts of stuff, right? And a penciler was, I was very surprised, a very early Terry Dodson.
Yeah.
So that was surprising to hear, to see both of those names.
Very sexy art, too. Very sexy.
So I got to tell you, at first, so I would say 9/10 of this, about 9/10 of the book, I didn't know where this was going. I didn't understand why, from what I could tell, because there's a couple stores in the mall now that are actually selling, like they sell boxes and boxes of comic books. A brand new one opened up, and at the time when they first opened, they were doing $3 for $1. So I bought like pretty much an entire run of Mantra, missing issue seven. No, I take that back. I got 1 through 10, but I'm missing 7. So I didn't get anything older than that, or after that. So anyhow, I saw this the woman on this on all of the covers. And so I start reading this first issue. I'm like, what is going on? When is this woman coming into play? Because she's not in the story pretty much at all. So it starts out with this black guy. And first thing, he gets a knock on the door. Some guy comes and he wants him to sign off some stuff. And you can tell by the inner monologue that you can tell that there's somebody inhabiting this man's body, because he's like, oh, I'm making these errors. This body is supposed to be left-handed, and I'm trying to write with my right hand, and I'm doing this and that and whatever. And so you get the feeling, obviously, right away, at least, that this that it's not the actual person anymore, and somebody's inhabiting his body. And his wife and son come to try to make up with them, and he sends them off and says he doesn't want to see them. And I'm like, oh man, this is kind of rough. He teams up with two other guys that are in this like kind of like armor and weaponry, same as him. and they go after these other guys that are almost dressed like kind of like medieval clothes and stuff, but they seem to have some sort of like sorcery about them. And then you quickly learn that each side has like almost like a spirit mentor, and the African American guy is Lukasz, Lukasz, and he leads this group. And apparently, what happens is these guys are constantly at odds with this other group, where I think the main bad guy is called Boneyard. And he's the evil mentor, and it's like the positive force is constantly against this negative force, and each time they die, they then go and inhabit another body, and so that's what happened here. He recently just inhabited this body, and they're going up against the other group, the evil group, and in the course of the fight. It looks like this evil group is trying to get this magical item. And even though they don't get it, neither does Lukasz's group. And he ends up being killed. So I said, okay, so now we're going to get into this woman. But no, it turns out instead he ends up inhabiting another black man who's just recently gotten back together with his wife. Apparently they had a very bad falling out, but they've managed to reconcile, and they're going to go on a double date. And they go to the door of the other couple that they're going to have a date with. And it's the woman from the cover, and her name is Eden. So apparently she helped get these two back together. And her and her boyfriend are going to go on a double date with the two of them. So he realizes who he is and that he's inhabiting this new man. His name is Carl. And what you learn is that he just basically like takes over this body. And what happens to the original mind of that person? You don't know. It's kind of insinuated that it's just gone, which is that's pretty rough. That like I guess this guy's just for all intents and purposes no longer exists. So he starts saying that he's got to go. He doesn't want to. He's got to leave. So of course his wife, they just reconciled. She's like, "What happened? What happened? Did I do something wrong?" He's like, "No, I got to go. I just got to go." And he leaves. And so everyone's pissed. They, you know, can't believe that he just walked out. He gets back to the headquarters of his group, and his mentor is called what is it? It's Archimage. And they gather together, and he says, you know, here I am, I'm Lukasz and the new body, and they all welcome him back. Archimage is there in person, and suddenly the spirit of Boneyard comes, and he speaks Archimage's real name, and because he knew his true name, somehow he's able to like draw him away and control him. Boneyard's forces start up against Lukasz and his group, and they're actually doing pretty well against Boneyard's forces, but they'd hired out like a mercenary, and this mercenary ends up killing Lukasz's second body, and he thinks now, because Archimage is out of the picture, is he going to die permanently or not? And much to his surprise, he's not. He doesn't. He awakes in bed next to this man who says, "Honey, what is it? The way you just tensed up." And he thinks to himself, "Honey, what? Am I gay? Wait, this doesn't feel." And he looks at himself in the mirror, and of course he's Eden. This absolutely beautiful woman. So he's totally like freaking out because he's a woman. He doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Wasn't he a womanizer sort of too? Or...
It didn't really say. No, I mean, more than anything, it seemed like he was just dumping all of these women that were attached to whoever's bodies he took over. He was just basically throwing them by the wayside. Like his wife, whatever kids he might have. I'm like, oh my God. But so anyhow, he's totally like very uncomfortable. And he, like, even some of the inner dialogue is very funny because he's like, this is all wrong. The rhythm, the movement, the center of gravity and breasts. What do women do with them? They're always so out there. So he's totally like, he's like, and then he's walking around. He's like, I can't walk in these heels. He takes off his shoes and starts walking in bare feet. He's trying to catch a cab. He's like, oh, I know how to catch a cab. And he sticks his chest out and like, just, you know, doing all this stuff. So he gets some information about what had happened at the headquarters. And it turns out, basically, everyone was killed except for one person. It was like Archimage's assistant, who a woman that he has kept young for hundreds of years. Lucas in the new body almost gets assaulted and raped, but he actually, instead of using weaponry, which they've always used before, now he seems to have some sort of magical power. And without even realizing what he's doing, he actually sets this would-be rapist on fire. And so then he ends up going to the hospital. He meets up with Archimage's assistant. She, even though he's now a woman, the assistant recognizes him right away and gives him a charm with a necklace with a charm on it. And as soon as he, I don't know if he, I should say he or she, I guess she at this point, as soon as she grabs it, she transforms with that body armor that she has with the cape and the hood. And she's very happy to know at least the costume has flat heels, which was entertaining. But the assistant then dies because she'd been kept young for years and years, but now without Archimage, she was very old and she ended up dying. The police want to question her, so she runs out. She takes the charm off and reverts back to regular clothes. She looks up at the driver's license, finds out where she lives, and she learns she's got a teenage boy and a young daughter. And she's like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And it ends with this mercenary that that other group had hired suddenly ringing the doorbell, and he's standing at the door and referring to her as Lucas. So he knows that it's her somehow. You don't know how, but that's the end of the first issue. And Mike, much to your relief, I thought this was very entertaining. I was like I said, I'm like, when does this woman come into play? I did not expect, even when I learned that he was like a body swapper, I still didn't expect him to inhabit the woman's body. I kind of thought maybe it would be something else where she's like, he starts training her or something and he falls by the wayside and she becomes the main protagonist. I didn't expect him to actually take over the body. So that was really surprising to me. I have to say I enjoyed it. I got to find track down issue number 7. I've got the first 10 issues I could go ahead and read of this, but yeah, I enjoyed it.
I liked Mantra quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorites. That and The Strangers, I liked a lot.
I had never heard of that, but I saw an ad for The Strangers in this one, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to check that one out too, because I didn't see any of those in all those boxes that I was telling you about where I bought these for $3 for $1.
They launched – Mantra was like – I can't remember if they launched with Prime first. Prime and Hardcase. Yeah, Prime. And Mantra, I think, were their initials, The Strangers. And then they came out with a lot more. But, yeah, I'm very fond of that line.
It was enjoyable, I have to say. And like you said, I mean, Terry Dodson drawing some of this stuff, even very, very early, you can tell, I mean, he doesn't have the expertise that he has today. But, I mean, you know that he can draw very beautiful-looking women. So it was a very good Very enjoyable.
I never rant about comics, but I don't like when Marvel acquires stuff because they just let it go by the wayside. They did the same thing with CrossGen.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to deal with it. When DC does it, they at least have their properties show up from time to time.
Right.
So it's like I would have much rather have had the Ultraverse get picked up by DC Comics.
It's like Marvel is just trying to get rid of the competition.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. That's what it sounds like to me too.
And now with Disney, it's gonna be even worse.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say too that and to that what you're talking about is, I've been looking forward to DC relaunching Milestone, and I know that. Apparently they just finished like some lawsuit or something, so maybe at some point they'll start publishing some Milestone stuff.
I haven't heard of them finishing that lawsuit.
I don't know what
the lawsuit was about.
Something to do with who was the one that passed away? It wasn't Dwayne McDuffie, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess his widow or something had some sort of lawsuit against them. But I thought I heard that or read that it had just been
Because all his partners had a big, like, they were going to do stuff. I mean, they've talked about it for a long time, and hopefully they will. That's another universe that I finished. So I finished Ultraverse. I finished Milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones I'm looking to finish are New Universe. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting close to that one. That was the shooter spin-off universe from Marvel.
Yeah, I had a lot of that early stuff.
And then I want to finish 2099. So those are the two for this year. And there's still some stuff from the what do they call them? The Amalgam Universe I want to finish?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's stuff that I need to finish in that. But,
you know what? I have very few Milestone. I probably have less than 10 issues total. I would absolutely love if they're going to do a relaunch or like start putting some stuff out, if they would put out some collected editions too, so I could go ahead and read some of that old stuff.
Yeah,
I agree. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Except DC doesn't know how to handle collected editions. That is true. Well, yeah. DC's what they do right now is they put something out and then if it doesn't have enough pre-orders, they cancel it.
Just cancel it, yep.
It happened ever since AT&T, so there must be like some line that they have to hit in pre-orders or they cancel it. If they don't hit that line, they figure, oh, there's not enough interest.
Yep.
And Marvel's a little different. I don't think they care, but they have a lot more money behind them. And AT&T's been like, I think they're micromanaged right now because they're losing so much money since the acquisition,
mm-hmm.
because they acquired, you know, DirecTV, they acquired Warner Brothers. I mean,
they probably overextended themselves.
They did. Yeah. And now I think they're trying to find, well, how do we exist now? You know, like, how do we turn this stuff? Because they bought things like not in a timely manner. DirecTV was already going down. You know what I mean? Because of streaming services and like, I don't know. It just, the acquisitions came at a bad time.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future. Just in a larger kind of conversation, I just feel like in a lot of ways, DC just, I don't know, they just feel like sometimes like they're floundering, like they're not quite sure what they need to do or in what direction to go. You know, they had the rebirth, that fantastic.
I think they're floundering because of the acquisition.
I do too.
I get the impression other people are blaming DiDio and all this stuff, but here's what I think, and just because I've been through business acquisitions, I think Dan DiDio is trying to find a way to feed his family and keep a job,
mm-hmm.
and he's trying to do it within their rules. Like he's trying to, and it's a tougher game to play. Before, he used to be able to do what he wanted to do. And they weren't being like micromanaged. Now imagine if you're under the microscope and every month saying, okay, here's my numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't see the numbers in a certain way, some things have to happen. And
he's
trying to find a way. This is all speculation on my part, just because I've met Dan, and I just don't think some of the crazy decisions that he's making are his. I think he's making them because of what's happened and because they're being micromanaged. And I don't know if you guys have been micromanaged, but when you are micromanaged, it is a big deal. And you change the way of your thinking, and you're more conservative, and you're like, how do I try to make something successful? And you take less risk. And imagine if you take less risk, then you're not going to have those breakout hits.
Well,
you're just trying to hit the line. You're just trying to hit the line.
Yeah.
And
I know
he wanted to publish the Jonah Hex omnibus. I know he wanted to publish, you know, like the Man of Steel omnibus by John Byrne.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't get the numbers. And he's in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because AT&T is telling him, you have to hit this number. And if he can't hit that number, he has to cancel it. So what does that do to the consumers? Mm-hmm. Well, the consumers say,
confidence.
I'm not going to even bother.
Yeah, because you lose confidence in these things.
I don't have confidence in you. You're holding up my money for 3 months before it gets returned. I could be investing it or buying something else. I'm not going to even I'm not going to even put an order in until it's on Amazon.
The one thing that I have to say, though, is that this is just me personally, but I just don't think that they should just keep going back to the well of new crisis, new, you know, relaunch of, you know, this is we're at this point now. Like, whether it was they did the new 52, then they said, okay, we're going to do Rebirth. It seems like they strayed away from Rebirth within a year after that. And then now, you know, there's the rumors of another reboot, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I know it's not a total reboot, but it's, you know, kind of a jump.
People think it's like, why should I care? But to me, it's still in continuity. Like, all of it matters, and it's still a moving thread. Like,
that's right, but so many people aren't as invested as you, and my fear is it becomes jumping. I mean, even for me, like, I tried so much new 52. I mean, I had to have tried like 30 of the 52 titles, and it just kept whittling down. Some of my favorite ones were the first ones that got canceled,
Why do you think?
Because nobody was buying them.
Exactly. So what you learn is the thing that you enjoy, like Inferior Five, they can't exist in our market.
Yeah.
They just can't. I mean, you either put it out to keep the license, and so nobody else can take Inferior Five, but you know ahead of time that who's gonna buy it? Us three, okay? They have three copies there because we want to know about Brother Power the Geek. Everybody else looks, who's the Inferior Five? Why do I care about Invasion? That happened years ago.
Where's the new Batman title?
Yeah, where's the new Batman number one? Where's the shiny new thing? And I can understand why, you know, people have limited budgets and they don't want to explore outside of what the norm is, and they like things that are the same. For me, I like things. I like them to challenge things, like to be different, and I like things to move. I like when Nightwing is a different character. I like that he can't remember. I like that things evolve. I like that I have a new Green Lantern in Far Sector. I like that things change. I want to roll with the changes. So people just don't like it. Why is that not hell?
And that's funny. That's all you see people complaining about online is Nightwing and this new Green Lantern and all this stuff. It's like that's why their sales are terrible. People are just so close-minded and opposed to anything new.
Exactly. And but they're hypocrites because you ask who's your favorite Green Lantern? Kyle Rayner. Okay. Well, Kyle Rayner wasn't that Green Lantern. That was Hal Jordan. What are you talking about? Well, who's your favorite Flash? Wally West. What?
Yeah, he was
like,
he was
what
the
hell?
Experiment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wally
they didn't know.
West is
they
the didn't, best Flash.
He is. Well, those are my best. Those are my favorite. And the thing it is because of those characters. before that they were iconic, and then they turned them into humans. They turned they made Wally have problems, even though he had a mansion and he was filthy rich at one time, and he hung
won the
out
lottery.
With Chunk. Yeah.
Well, and you know
Kyle
what?
Kyle lost his girlfriend in her refrigerator. You know, it's uh-huh. just. And then you had Hal Jordan like kill the Guardians and kill his own teammates. And it's just like, you know, people freak out. Oh, what the hell? Hal would never do that.
But I wonder if part of it is just me getting older too, because like I loved all of that stuff.
Oh, so
but like if I saw it today, I wonder if I'd be like, oh my God, that's not whatever.
Yeah. And I'm the opposite. I'm like, as I get older, I'm like, I'm reading manga. What the hell?
Yeah, that's very
unusual. What
the
fuck is happening right now?
In your old age, you start expanding your horizons instead of shrinking them.
Exactly. And I
which is great.
I'm more accepting of everything because I've learned that it's not important. It's important for me to be entertained. It's not important for me to think I own these characters. It's important to just sit down and enjoy. Why do I read comics? Because I want to escape. Because I want to not think about work. I want to not think about life. You know, I want to go to these other worlds. And if it does that, I'll watch the Blood Island trilogy on Amazon. You know, like this crappy B film. I escaped. I left this world and watched some nuclear radiation monster kill a bunch of virgins. I don't care. You know, it's like, that's what I look for in entertainment now. And now it's like, before I used to be that person. I was like, why is Radioactive Man a Russian now? Like, he was Chinese all my life. And then he's showing up in Reginald Hudlin's as a Russian. And I was like, angry. I'm like, my whole icon was Radioactive Man on the bullpen bulletins for him. What are you doing? But I'm a different person. Like, I never thought today. I'm ordering like 3 manga every month now, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
I don't even know you anymore.
Backwards, right to left. and I'm flowing now. You know, I'm flowing. Before I would be like, what the hell is this?
Mike's reading in circles over there.
Right.
That's right.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, and I think I've heard you say it before, Mike, but when something new comes along, it's like, you know, it's going to be back to normal in a matter of months, you know?
Yeah.
It nothing like that usually ever sticks. And I mean, it's like, and the ones that do stick usually end up being like fan favorites, like Wally or Kyle.
Beta Ray Bill, like, why was Beta Ray Bill a Thor? Like, why did he become iconic? You know, why is Wally West Flash? Why did Jane Foster become such an awesome Thor?
That was incredible, wasn't it?
Why does it happen? It happens because you take a risk.
Yeah, yes. you just get the right writer to on that property,
right.
And you know, at the right time,
and the right story.
Yeah.
Why did the Dark Knight Returns change the world? Because you took a risk.
Yeah.
Why did Green Arrow Longboy Hunters make something that, you know, Green Arrow couldn't sell a comic book before that? And he's sold a 100-issue run. Why?
Yeah.
Because it took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make something great by going in a circle in a merry-go-round. You make something great by being on a roller coaster.
And look at
you sound like that old lady from Parenthood.
And that's how I live my life. I'd rather be on the roller coaster. Like the grandma says, I'd rather be on the roller coaster.
Yeah. The other one just goes around. Nothing.
Yeah, the other one, nothing. Exactly. I love that movie, by the way.
Me too. It's awesome.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to talk about one more thing, but I'm going to marathon it. I read 2 really great comics that I purchased for $1. One was Charlton Comics, The Ghost Manor, number 17. Which had 3 stories in it. The one that I liked the most was very interesting. It's called Well, Hello, Dolly. It's a weird story, but it has to do with a Hopi doll. And I don't know if you know what the Hopi Indians, they used to have these Hopi dolls. Well, a white woman goes to the store and she sees this Hopi doll and she says, I want to buy it. And the woman says, it's not for sale. But she eventually convinces her to sell it, and she sells this Hopi doll. Well, her husband is on the reservation and he works for the government. And he's determining if the reservation needs more money, and he's an asshole. Like, he's like looking around here. These guys have they can do their own stuff, and he sees the poverty as he's driving around in his Rolls Royce, sees all this crap. He goes back to Washington, and he's like, they don't need any money. They don't need nothing. Well, this Hopi doll is listening the whole time, and he's starting to freak out, and he's starting to have nightmares, and it's one of those stories where everything turns around and he starts helping the Hopi Indians because of his nightmares. So it's really weird and it's really scary that there was this like racism and he wasn't seeing like what was in front of him. And it was a really solid story. I don't know who it's by because it doesn't credit anybody. And then the second story was a love story about this old man that had this old house and he's always searching for his wife, and it's pretty tragic. He always sees people on his property, and this one guy on his property is trying to buy his house to turn it into a hospital, and he comes out with his shotgun and starts shooting him. And then this one nurse shows up. Well, she's actually a ghost. She's actually his ex-wife that was a nurse, and sort of saves his life, but he doesn't know she's a ghost, and she's a ghost. Eventually the guy does turn it to a hospital because the old man dies, and you find out the old man lost his wife very early in life because she fell down a well and they never found her body, and then she came back as a nurse. So that was a really interesting story. And the last one had to do with an old man that's getting ready to retire, and he's pretty broke, and he has an old ship, and the guys that are on his ship, his crew, they think he's rich because he has the safe, and they say, let's take advantage of the old man. Let's take his treasures from his safe. And they actually kill him. And what you really learn is that the old man had no money, and he was barely living on a poverty level. And he had candy inside of the safe, you know, that he would use. And he haunted these guys and eventually killed them, so they could freeze to death because they were like sailing near a bunch of like icebergs and stuff like that. But it was pretty tragic. And I thought all these stories were great. I thought the art was good. It was my first issue of Ghost Manor, and I am finding new love in Charlton that I've never had before, especially in their horror and romance. So that was really good. And then I have a really short one I read from Dell Comics, Combat number 33. And this one read like you were reading a history book. And I knew nothing about this. This talks about the Euston and the Perth and the Battle of the Sunda Strait. And it tells it from a perspective of a survivor. So the guy who wrote it was actually on the Perth. And it's written like it's crazy. And I want to know more, because when I watch like World War II documentaries and all this stuff, a lot more is focused on the Eastern Front, like the Germans,
yeah,
and the Americans and the British. What you don't realize is how close we could have lost the war because of the Japanese. They were so much better at naval warfare. They had way more weapons prepped. Yes, we had more gasoline and stuff like that, and that's what their concerns were. And they wanted to grow just like Germany wanted to grow. They needed to grow because of people and their, you know, how small Japan is compared to everything else. Mm-hmm. They wanted to grow out just like Germany did. And they were kicking our ass. And the more and more I learn about what was happening, We were close to losing the war. If it wasn't freaking for Midway and like miracles, we would have lost, because they knew what we were doing before we were doing it. Before the Navajo became encryptors of a language for us to decipher. They knew what we were doing before we did it. And if it wasn't for that language and stuff like that, we could have lost the war. And if it wasn't for, like, people predicting what they were going to do and making guesses, we would have lost because we were outnumbered. And this is a story told through a naval guy that was on the Perth. And he said it through the Japanese. They were kicking their ass. I mean, they got hit with 3 torpedoes. They had a gunner on the ship. They knew the ship was going down, and he wouldn't give up. So he would fire. He ran out of ammo. So this guy's on the freaking Perth, and he's loading duds because he's hoping the duds will hit somebody on the ship and at least knock one Japanese naval guy. But it was an incredible story, and it was told in like you were watching a documentary, and I knew nothing about the Australians and how they lost these 2 ships in this strait. Because you don't hear much about Australia either, you know?
No.
They were our allies. And it talks about how bad the communication was between the Australians, the Americans, the British, all our allies. He talks about the process because he was on the ship and how long it took and how fast the Japanese were reacting ahead of things. So... yeah, it was an incredible comic book and with an incredible cover. And that's I cool. picked it up for $1, and it's like at least a very fine copy. It's an amazing copy.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm learning a lot. And I even went to go research it to see how close it was. And I was like, this is like a documentary. This is like he and it's incredible because the guy who wrote it was captured because as the Perth sank, the Japanese grabbed a lot of the naval guys off the Australian ship and put them into a concentration mm-hmm. camp. And there weren't that many survivors. I think it was like 1/4 of the ship that survived, and this guy was one of the survivors.
Wow.
It's an incredible story. Mm-hmm. Sad though, because yeah. man, it's hard to see like these guys, all these soldiers knowing they're going to die. Like they were so outnumbered, and they knew it. It was like the Alamo. You know, you're there, and you know that you're there, and you know you have to fight, but you're gonna probably die. Like
yeah.
you're just outgunned, and it doesn't look good. But yeah, these comics were amazing. I just love comics. God, it's just such a world like you could explore, and everything I read is just a gold now as I get older. I don't get crankier. I get crankier when I can't read my comics.
That's right. Very cool.
Anybody else got anything else?
Oh, I sure do. Kyle, yeah. you too?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got one more.
All right, Kyle.
So this is... it's another series that I'm slowly...
Step on the cat?
No, my my puppy is wrestling with the cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they...
Didn't sound good.
they'll do that all day. They'll just wrestle all day long. Like, it's constantly... You hear the cat screech, and then you hear the puppy yelp, and they're constantly wrestling all day. But this is another series that I'm slowly getting through. This is the 3rd volume of Legion of Superheroes. This is number 42, from 1988. And this was Paul Levitz and Greg LaRocque.
What issue did you say?
42. So it's a Millennium crossover. And
you know, Greg LaRocque, every time I hear his name, I think of Wally because he started to do a lot of the early Flash stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's what I think of too, is that flash stuff.
Yeah.
This issue was, a lot of it was cleanup from the previous issues. They had a big battle with Starfinger and his gang, and so Colossal Boy is in the hospital during this one, and it kind of opens up with Polar Boy and Tellus. They're kind of doing monitor duty, and just talking about some of the cleanup efforts that are happening with Starfinger's gang. And then we have a scene with Sun Boy and Laurel Kent, and they had just come back from a night of dancing, and Sun Boy tries to invite her into his apartment, but she turns him down. And so then as he leaves, she's kind of thinking to herself, and she thinks, sorry, but not as sorry as you'll be. And then she's thinking, I've waited for this night for so long. So she's up to something. And there's a quick scene in the gym where Invisible Kid is swimming, and Shadow Lass is like balancing on these rings above the pool, and Tellus dives into the pool and like splashes Shadow Lass, and she gets mad. And it's an odd scene, because then Invisible Kid just kind of gets out of the pool and like leaves with Chameleon Boy. Chameleon Boy is getting some workout equipment to take to Colossal Boy in the hospital. And then we go back to Laurel Kent, and she is sneaking into the multi-lab, which is now empty. So she's like snooping around trying to get data from the computers. And Brainiac 5 comes in and asks what she's doing there. And then she just like starts throwing equipment at him, and so she's not being too subtle here. And he's deflecting it all with his force field, and she just grabs bigger equipment and like throws this huge piece of machinery at him. It knocks through his force shield and knocks him out. And right at that time, then Tellus and Shrinking Violet and Shadow Lass come in and see what's going on, and they start a big fight with them, and Laurel Kent is able to fly out of there. Like, she flies up through the breaks through the ceiling and flies off, and the Legionnaires are really confused as to what's going on. And then there's a scene with Legionnaires kind of cleaning up the mess that was made in the fight. So Brainiac's focusing kind of all of his will on repairing the computer and the damage that was done to it, to try and find out what Laurel Kent was after. And then there's a scene with Colossal Boy and Chameleon Boy in the hospital. And Colossal Boy had been hit like in the leg with like a some sort of like energy blast from Starfinger in the last issue. So that's why he's in the hospital here. A group of, so all the Legionnaires that had been fighting with Laurel Kent, they take off to the Himalayas to try and, they're looking for, basically a an old computer that would have data on Laurel Kent. So they go to this like Buddhist temple, and all of they find out that all of the monks are androids, and the monks start attacking them. They go inside the temple, and there is Laurel Kent sitting at the throne, and she's got the Manhunter outfit on, and you now see that she is a Manhunter. So she throws them around a little bit here, and there's a page that kind of ties in, well, kind of gives some backstory on the Manhunters and, you know, being created by the Guardians and all that. And then it, the issue ends with a to be continued as the, as Laurel, blows up the temple that they're all in. So they all kind of explode in this temple, and it's to be continued.
I love the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, that was a this, and I'm really
Paul
loving
Levitz
this.
Is great with it. I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even when he was in New 52, that was a great title.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one title, Legion Lost and Legion of Superheroes, that was really good.
Yeah.
Plus, you had the Giffen art. Oh my god.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Isn't he killing it on Inferior 5? I mean, it's incredible.
Oh yeah. It's awesome. Yeah.
You have the Tasmanian devil, like, just spinning. Like,
I know.
And, like, I remember him from Global Guardians. Like, yep. I was just like, oh, this is awesome. And you have the Starro creature just coming over and kicking his ass. It just looks amazing.
It really is. I wish that they would have been able to do all 12. That would have been.
And it's probably, like, the best Peacemaker I've ever read. Like, it's amazing. Because he has the helmet, like, talking to him at the same time. Like, he's talking to himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like, amazing.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, all kinds of craziness happening. Like, KGB Beast is there. And then Red Rock, the Rocket Reds. And oh,
it's just such a weird, like, assortment of characters. It's I love it.
Yeah, and that one girl's a Durlin.
A Durlin, like, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of
Legion.
Legion, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. do you guys can I got I still have two more. Do you mind if I cover them real fast?
Yeah, go do yeah, it sure. Like I did. Sure.
All right, and before I do that, I did want to let you guys know, and Mike in particular. Well, not actually both of you, because you guys covered Hawk and Dove. I don't know, a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Today is Carl Kessel's sister's birthday.
Uh-huh.
And they named that character after her because her name is Dawn Kessel.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's cool.
I thought that was interesting. So what I read today, the other one that I read was E-Man number one.
Ah.
The second series from First Comics.
A lot going on with that character on the Twitters with
Twitter, I
Joe
know.
Crawford. And,
I think that that's what's inspired me to read this because I had a whole bunch of them just
Joe, speaking of birthdays, Joe Staton just had one.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
All right. So this is from 1983. And,
which ties back to Millennium, which Kyle just covered.
Yep.
Because Joe Staton drew that.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it's like all these connections.
So this series was not with Nicola Coody, although it was Joe Staton on pencils. It was written by Martin Pasco. And so this one, it definitely picks up where the other series had left off, because if you remember E-Man, his name is Electron. He was roommates with Nova Kane, the exotic dancer. So she's in it. She's already got her powers.
Get it, Nova Kane?
Novocaine, and Alectron, Electron.
Yeah.
They're full of these types of
very clever
types of names. Yeah, I mean that's the whole thing with this type of I don't, Kyle, I don't know if you've ever read E-Man, but it is very tongue in cheek and a humorous type of
nice
comic. Yeah. So in this one, turns out that they're doing a film production nearby, and E-Man is getting kind of tired of the superheroics, and so he decides he's considering becoming an actor and working with this particular director. And hang on, I'm trying to find this guy's. Oh, his name is Stringpole Schmaltzberg, and he is the equivalent of Steven Spielberg. He is directing the picture VD, the Ultra Detestable. It's about an alien. So obviously that's instead of ET, the extraterrestrial. And so anyhow, it turns out, I'll just go through this quickly, but it turns out that this director is working with this evil brain that they had defeated previously. It's just this huge, enormous brain. And they thought that the brain had died because they had smashed the glass that it was enclosed in. But his robots managed to seal it, but not before there was some brain damage. So this brain acts very, very strangely. He's working with this director, and he created this helmet that the Steven Spielberg analog can put on to make E-Man and Nova think that they're in these different movie type sets. So at one point it kind of takes a parody of Close Encounters. It takes a parody of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then in this other scene, him and there's a detective that works with them as well. His name's Detective Mauser. And it looks like they're going to get squished by this Ferris wheel that's just rolling at them. And then they're transported into the scene at the beginning of near the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where him and Marion are fighting the Nazis at her bar, and it's on fire and so forth. So they end up finding out that it's the brain, and they end up defeating him. And that's going to pick up in the next issue is that there's this guy working at this company called Parasite Industries. It's Parasight, Parasite Industries. And his name is Ford Fairmont. And he is creating mutants. He's bringing in classes of mutant kids, and using and powering them up to go against E-Man. And as soon as he gets done, he is going to have his own squad of. Hang on, I want to make sure I get this right. He's going to get his own squad of F-Men. So it's Ford Fairmont instead of Chris Claremont. And he's going to have the F-Men attack the E-Man. So obviously F comes after E, and that's where he's getting that. And what I thought was entertaining, too, at the end of this, it had a one-page little cartoon that looks like it's a, one of those Hostess cartoons, or advertisements, rather. But it's just a quick little thing where, like, there's this evil dentist woman trying to stuff kids full of sweets to get give them cavities. And it's rescued by a robot called Raj 2000. And he defeats the evil dentist and gives kids some real food, Mostis Twinkles cakes. And it's written and drawn by John Byrne. So I thought that was interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
And this is the 1983 one?
Yeah, the 83 yeah. one from first, yeah. So this was pretty good. I have to say I probably enjoy what I've read in the first series with Nicola Coody and Joe Staton a little bit more than this one. This one was kind of like all over the place, but you know, it was funny and it's I still enjoyed it.
I like the one guy that's like the detective that
yeah, Mauser.
Yeah, he's got this. He draws him like he has no mouth, and the cigarette's always just hanging out of it.
Exactly. Yep. That's him. I like that one too.
Very iconic because I remember I first learned about E-Man through Kmart because
oh really?
They reprinted the E-Man comics in Modern, you know, with the Modern comics imprint, and that's where I started to buy E-Man. And I always looked at the art, and I was like, man, that's a weird-looking art. Especially that Mauser guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's drawn very funny. So I'll just do the last one real quick. It was, speaking of John Byrne, it was Doom Patrol number 7 from the John Byrne series, where he wrote and drew it. And so in issue number 7, basically it starts out right in the action, and you don't understand what's going on. But Nudge is one of the newer characters, and she pulls up in a cab, and there's a fire department, there's police cars, they're all over the place, and she asks where the rest of the team is, because I forget this one guy's name. He's like an alien. He's blue, but anyhow, she asks where the rest of the team is, and Rita for some reason has turned into a giant gorilla, and Larry, Negative Man, is trying to pacify her, but so it quickly goes flashes back to what had led up to this, and they up to this point in the series they had several encounters with weird things going on, vampires, rampaging robots, et cetera, et cetera. And so the chief went ahead and put all of the disturbances that they've encountered throughout the United States on a map. And what it turns out is when he kind of does a vector, it all leads to one particular location in Harbor City, Oregon. So he sends the team there, Robot Man, Rita Farr, Negative Man, Nudge is the new younger girl. She she has a pet four-armed ape called Grunt. And again, I don't remember what the blue character's name is, but he has energy powers. So they're going to go and see what's going on, if there's anything going on at this particular location. It turns out that seems to be the headquarters of this group that's been causing this these problems. And when they learn that the Doom Patrol is on their way, they're not concerned, he says, unless it's the Justice League, we don't have to take any extraordinary precautions. So they end up, some weird things start happening. They walk by a woman walking her dog. The dog suddenly increases to a huge size and becomes vicious. And they try to grab the dog and hold it still, and it shrinks back down to normal, and the woman runs away. They turn around, and there's three velociraptors running after them. So they don't quite know what's going on. They take care of that, and Nudge goes away from the rest of the group. It turns out that she's grown up in the city, and it sounds like she calls what I assume is her mom, but she can't bring herself to talk, and so she hangs up the phone and runs away. And then the last thing you do is see her running by an electronics store that has a TV out front that confirms that there's a superpowered group fighting prehistoric creatures. And so she jumps in a cab, and then that's where it picks back up. So you have Rita attacking this dinosaur. This main group that's responsible for all these crazy things has this beam that's causing these things to happen. And it, he shoots the beam at Robot Man, and Robot Man becomes filled with rage and starts beating the crap out of Grunt, that gorilla. And Rita grabs Cliff, saying, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Well, she gets shot with the beam as well, and she turns into this enormous ape. And she starts going on a rampage, and that's when Negative Man comes out of Larry Trainer and tries to start settling her down. Nudge gets there, and they're like, oh, my God, wait, we got to do something. We got to do something. Well, I don't know if either one of you – I'm sure you do, Mike. Kyle, I'm not sure if you remember Faith from that area of the Justice League. There was a female superhero called Faith, and she briefly spent some time with the Doom Patrol at the beginning of this series. Well, Nudge's like, oh, my God, like, I just remembered. Like, Faith said if we need anything, call for help. But she's up on the watchtower on the moon, and Nudge has some telepathy. So she's trying. She's like, I tried for 20 minutes, and I'm not even getting a response. But suddenly she looks, and she sees Martian Manhunter's cape. So she's like, John Jones. And he turns around, and he's a huge green ape now. So, and that's the end of the issue. So I haven't read the next issue yet. I don't know what's going to happen. I have been reading this one, Mike, on DC Universe.
Yeah.
So last time I picked up, it had the first 7 issues available, but I saw that issue 7 was part 1 of 2, so I only had read the first 6. And now it has quite a few. I mean, it seems like they're constantly adding comics, like even older ones, on there. Mm-hmm. It seems like they have quite a large number of that series, where when I first got this app, it only had like the first 3 issues. Then they added a few more. Then they added a few more. Then they had the first 7. And now they have quite a few. I didn't even look to see how many more are on there. So I decided to read issue 7, and I'll read issue 8 probably later today to see how this wraps up. But I told you, Mike, that I'm interested after watching Doom Patrol. Have either one of you watched Doom Patrol on DC Universe?
Oh, yeah. I went through the first season.
Yeah, it was.
I still have quite a few to go. I've only watched 2 episodes.
Okay. I loved it. I thought it was, I mean, very irreverent. I thought it was really, really well done. Very fun. It made me super interested, because I had just previously read the whole Grant Morrison run earlier last year.
Yeah.
But it made me actually want to read like the original, even old stuff, even though I know in tone they're nothing alike. Mm-hmm. I still want to.
No, but they're like, great. Arnold Drake really was ahead of his time.
Yeah, I want to read that original stuff.
Yeah,
so
it's good.
I had mentioned to Mike a while back that I'm going to be this year. I'm going to be in the market for that My Greatest Adventures number 80, which is the first appearance of the Doom Patrol. I've been looking online. I don't see really. There's only a couple of them that I can find online, and they're not priced. For what I want to spend in terms of what the grade is, I'm seeing some stuff. I went on eBay. Everything is so overpriced on eBay for the grades that they're in. I think I'll have better luck if I'm actually looking in person. If I'm at a con and I can manage to find somebody that has something in like a mid grade or a very good. That's what I'm looking for. I don't want to spend a ton of money, but
I think mine is in VG.
See, that's exactly the grade that I'm interested in, is like a VG. It's still a really nice looking book, but I don't need to spend $500 on it. But yeah, so that's all I've got. I read all these this morning. They were pretty enjoyable. I haven't had a chance to read some older comics in a little bit, except for I am reading the Batman Omnibus. I think it's volume 3 of the Golden Age Omnibus. So I've been reading a lot of Batman, but this was nice to read.
And you keep caught up on your other reads. That's pretty impressive.
That's my main focus. So a lot of stuff fall by the wayside, but I try to, whether that means reading 5 or 6 comics a day, I'll make sure that I get through them.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can we can wrap this one up. And Kyle, thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. Chris wasn't able to join, so it was nice.
Yeah, we missed you, Chris.
Yeah.
It's especially special because we can't record tonight. So
I'm glad you were able to get together
in the morning.
Yeah, again, thanks for asking.
So if you want to join us whenever we get together, hopefully next weekend, we are talking Inferior 5.
Oh, you guys are?
Yeah, we're talking Inferior 5 and Batman's Grave. Are you reading that?
Yeah, I think there's only two or three issues, right?
There's five. Four or five, yeah.
Is there really that many already? Wow.
Yeah.
Except for because this is a 5-week month, so my next shipment will be, if they ship on time, I should get it next Thursday or Friday. But other than that, I'm all caught up on everything. So what time do you guys normally talk?
At night. What is it, 7:30?
It's usually 8 or 8:30 here, so yeah. I guess it'd be
9:30.
Yeah.
Wow, it's late for you.
I'm going to be half asleep.
Well, and if Rob wants to join, we
no,
can
no, no.
We could start a little earlier.
You wouldn't have to. I'm just joking. That's Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Next week?
Uh-huh.
Do you go outside and watch for the mystery?
I spend the day looking for groundhogs.
You relive the same day over and over again?
I do. You know what I think is fascinating is that the only reason why that means that, like, oh my God, every day is Groundhog Day, is because of the movie. I think that's incredible. Yeah. Like, and you don't have to have seen that movie. Like, so many people haven't seen that movie, but if you say, oh my God, it's like Groundhog Day here, they know exactly what you mean, even if they haven't seen the movie. And then they kind of.
They had a Groundhog Day episode on Arrow this season.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I think this season of Arrow's been amazing because it deals with crisis. Like, I haven't gotten to the crisis episode yet, but like the penultimate episode before crisis, I was in tears. On a CW show, I was there. I was there crying away.
Well, if I don't, I'll keep. Thank you for the invite. If nothing's going on that evening, which there probably wouldn't be at that time.
I'll send out a reminder
join you guys
Saturday or Friday.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And just to make sure we can make it.
Drop me is it just those two things that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we'll be talking about a poll.
Okay.
I think we're gonna have a new poll.
Yeah, it's time for a poll.
Yeah, it's time.
It is.
So you can You can reach us at Geek Brunch. I got to remember not to say DC Noise because it's so weird. GeekBrunchPodcast.com. At Rob Krieger.
Yep.
At Mike Myers Brunch and at Kyle Pettit 5, right?
K Pettit 5. Yep.
And
I still can't get it right because I always type, when I send to you, I just type Kyle.
I'll either type Mike or I'll start to type OMAC.
OMACtivate. I don't know if you've ever read that. Have you read OMAC?
Not the original, no.
Have you read the Dan DiDio one?
No, I haven't.
Oh man, if you like this Inferior 5, oh my God, it'll blow your mind. It's very much in that artistic.
It's New 52, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I think I've read the second series that was like three or four years before that. I never read the New 52.
The Jack Kirby one is awesome.
Yeah, I never read that.
Oh, that's incredible.
So the one that you're talking about, he's like a big blue guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't. Well,
there's been a couple incarnations. There's the original.
Yep.
And then John Byrne even did an OMAC, a two-issue black and white. And the deluxe format. And then he was like around in Commandy as a backup feature, like towards the end of Commandy. And and then he became a satellite in the Batman, which you're probably familiar, the OMAC project.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with
that. And then in New 52, he was kind of revamped again.
Interesting.
But he's an interesting character, and there are, on the DC app, we could, if we start picking cartoons, we could do like a Batman Brave and the Bold or whatever, where OMAC is in it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Buddy Blank. Yeah. It's one of my favorite characters. I think that's why when I saw like Kirby draw that, I found his comic book at the dump and I couldn't put it down, because when he was on skis across a desert ocean, I was just like, what is he doing? All this Kirby crackle and machines, and the Build-A-Friend, I think, is an amazing concept, because like terrorists were using these Build-A-Friends as bombs, and they were like, it was ahead of its time, because we're getting there now where you could have like an AI sexual partner. And that's what Build-A-Friend was about back then. So
that's crazy.
Except they were armed. They were they were bomb devices. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. And you guys have a great Sunday.
And you as well.
You too.
All right. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Yep. Bye. See you.